I don't know, we're recording now.
Okay.
God damn it.
It's a lot different without Frank here. So you'll throw the intro in, and we'll start now.
The following program contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion advised.
Welcome to the Marvel Superhero Podcast. I'm a legal machine, and with me is...
Mr. Fix-It.
And today we are Frank...
Free?
Free!
Wah, wah, wah.
Oh, man, we sent that motherfucker to another country! Alright, so we decided we got to do a little podcast. So we had to find something that our good friend Frank wouldn't be upset we did without him. So we decided that we would just do a little Mr. Fix-It, who is Mr. Fix-It's character, and... Iron Man, who is my character, and Trish trying to find a little story where they crossed over, which we found didn't happen very often. So we found a little two-part crossover that happened in, I believe it was in 1989. This is from Iron Man number 247 in October of 1989, and Incredible Hulk number 361. Incredible Hulk number 361.
That tells you a lot about Mac right there. Yeah,
from November 1989. So, alright, I guess we can just start off by talking about why the hell do we like these two characters? I know we kind of went over these briefly in our origin stories in episode number one, but I think we could probably flesh out a little bit more that it's not just the characters we like, but I think we also, you know, we have our favorite creative teams and whatnot, too.
What aspects of the character? I mean, the characters are always evolving, and it's nice to see their different takes on them.
Right, and it's funny, during this two-parter... we get one of the aspects of Iron Man that I hate, and one of the aspects that you like the best.
Oh yeah, Fix-It was my all-time favorite Hulk. Right.
So at this point in these characters' lives, we Hulk in full Gray Hulk, Joe Fix-It.
Leg-breaking mafia style.
Full-on Hulk for hire. And Iron Man has recently been shot by a psycho lover who was shot in the chest, ended up hitting his spinal cord, so he's paralyzed, floating around a la Professor X.
Yes.
Professor,
I thought like, the exact same thing.
As soon as you see a combo character in a wheelchair, the first thing you say is Professor X. But
the standard.
Kathy Dare was the name of the psycho that shot him. So, yeah, it was a real happy time.
Well, let's be honest. It's a little bit of a whiny.
I think he had been shot maybe 5 issues before this. So you went through the whole, you know, trying to save his life because he got pretty close to death, and then he kind of comes to grips with the fact that he's not paralyzed, so the former handsome playboy Tony Stark is now confined to a wheelchair as a cripple. So
was this supposed to be like the catching up to him? Is his past lifestyle was catching up to him?
No, not necessarily. I mean,
Well, because you read this stuff, right? I mean, did they kind of lead up to that?
No, but he was basically... The chick who shot him, Kathy Dare, was a straight-up stalker. Like, it went really Fatal Attractions, where at one point she came out and she was trying to say that, even though Tony Stark was, like, ignoring her, she came out in the press and said that, like, she was his, or he was her fiancé and all this stuff, and he's like, what the hell are you talking about? And apparently he spurned her enough times that then she snuck into his house and shot him.
Wow. Like, every other supervillain could not pull off, yet crazy bitch could.
Hey, man. there's some things about the women's anatomy that they say is undefeated. So
to a man's heart.
Yes, and they had hooked up at one point, which is why she went, you know, fell crazy in love with him, whatever. And of course
he dropped the D on her.
Yeah, well, Tony Stark did that occasionally. So anyway, she ended up being institutionalized. So, you know, Iron Man went to some weird places. But he was very whiny. Like, at this point, he was really like, oh, I'm in this wheelchair. What was me?
Yeah. Definitely that Iron Man issue. He's just wah-wah, you know. Oh, get me into this monstrosity of a chair and change. It's just, you know, it's kind of whiny.
Well, but again, he was paralyzed, so whatever.
This is after his alcoholic stage, right?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. This is way after that. But this is, you know, you always have the Tony Stark battles, and you always have the Iron Man battles. This was the one where Tony Stark was going through a rough spot, and being in the armor, he was able to walk.
Yeah.
So he was going to the armor for sanctuary. So he was spending very little time out of the armor because he couldn't walk otherwise. He hated to be in that chair. It's just another, you know, these characters have been around for decades, so you run into these spots.
Well, I mean, honestly, in these books, they did have a cool combination of villains, which I really liked. They definitely brought out villains that I felt that Tony Stark would be fighting on a regular basis.
So the other interesting thing about these two issues, before we get into the plot and what we actually felt about the story, that I thought was interesting, was that these are really two of the classic creative teams to work on these two books. So, for instance, the Iron Man issue has Dave Michelinie and Bob Layton, who are basically the fathers of all good Iron Man stories. They did the Demon in the Bottle stuff. They did the Armor Wars. They did the Doom crossover, the Doom Quest crossover, which I'd like for us to touch on eventually, because that's good stuff. And then for the Hulk side, we have Peter David and Jeff Purvis.
And Peter David literally wrote the Bible for the Hulk. I mean,
right.
I personally love 99% of all the stuff he wrote for the Hulk, where it took him. And Jeff Purvis, I mean, was just a nice little artist to pop in and just really just make the Hulk ugly. And that persona of him that's supposed to be dark and ugly and twisted kind of really gave it a little bit of life. Though they did kind of pull back a little bit. But even you can look at it, I mean, his head's a little square. He's a little smaller. His eyes, he looks a little more devious. So, you know, I really did enjoy him. It was a shame he only lasted 19 episodes or issues.
Yeah, and Purvis really brought a super, you know, it was funny because I think he followed McFarlane, right?
Yeah, right after
so, McFarlane. McFarlane's Hulk wasn't exactly like Gary Frank's attractive Hulk. I mean, he was pretty jacked up, too.
Well, yeah. Well, no, you're right, and I guess that's where he got that from. But, of course, he did the dumb Hulk. This Hulk, I mean, you have him run around in, you know, $1,000 trench coats, as he likes to state, and he's definitely a leg breaker, you know, mafioso type.
Yeah, but Purvis is a super unique artist. You're not going to...
No, you're not going to mistake his artwork for somebody else.
It's very close
to McFarlane, a little Art Adams, maybe a little Dale Keown. Like, they all kind of...
I don't know about Keown.
You don't think so?
No. But it's real dirty and gritty. Like you said, the Hulk looks like just like a big-ass cinder block. Like, he looks super cool. So I've always been a fan of Purvis. I know a lot some people don't, but I think it's really good stuff. And they're also... Bob Layton and Purvis are basically the opposites of one another. Where Bob Layton, everything is super clean and shiny. The armor just glistens. I mean, there's just reflections all over his armor all the time. And then you get to Purvis, and Purvis's Hulk is just dirty and grimy. I mean, even Bob Layton, he's got a great Grey Hulk on the cover of this, but that's a clean-ass Grey Hulk. That's clean. And then you flip over to the Purvis side. Like you said, he's got the squinty eyes and the big old blockhead. It's just funny, the contrast.
Oh, white gloves. I'm not quite grasping the white gloves, but...
Well...
He wants to keep clean.
That's right. You don't want to leave any prints when you're out doing jobs for the mob. I guess we can go ahead and start with the story themselves. I mean, it kind of starts out where Iron Man is being... He's out up on the North Pole, and he's meeting with the heads of Hydra and AIM, because they're being currently attacked by another criminal organization called the Magia. Magia's head by Madame Mask, who was a big character in Iron Man comic books. Whitney Frost was the original Madame Mask, who Iron Man had a thing with. We're not going to go too far into that. At this point, Whitney Frost has been murdered, and there's a new Madame Mask that's the head of Magia. So, or Magia, I don't know how to pronounce these things. It's all in words, so we don't ever know how they're pronounced. So, they both meet with Iron Man, AIM and Hydra, and they both say, hey, we know you can get to Madame Mask. Go get her and bring her to us. And he was like, why the hell would I help AIM and Hydra? That's ridiculous. So he's like, peace, I'm out of here. So then the main scientist supreme, the head of AIM's, scientist, says, don't worry, I think I know someone else that can help us, right? So that's sort of foreshadowing who they have an idea. At this point, they call in Mr. Fix-It, and Mr. Fix-It says, all right, so what's the deal? And they're like, we want you to go capture Madame Mask, and what we're going to do is we're going to basically wipe her memory so that she forgets why she's going to town on AIM and Hydra. So basically, AIM and Hydra, they're normally enemies. They used to be the same organization. They split.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole thing is, why are these two guys trying to work together? And they're trying to work together because Magia is trying to destroy them both. So they're like, all right, let's call a little truce and figure out what the hell's going on. So they figure out the best way to get Magia to stop coming after both of them is to just wipe Madame Mask's memory. And since she's the head, she'll stop them coming after him. So Joe Fixit's basically like, okay, whatever, don't care. Just, you're gonna give me cash or not?
And yeah, like, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're gonna get boatloads of cash, just go cash. He gets out there, he crashes into her, this is out in Las Vegas, he crashes her warehouse, literally at one point,
bitch slaps her,
like, backhands her, grabs her and flies off. Jumps through the roof, they hop, and I guess she's got a microchip on her mask.
Where they can track her, yeah.
So they can track her.
Just,
so,
you know, not your grandfather's Hulk. Hulk usually would not bitch slap like this.
Wouldn't just straight up smack a hoe. And he does, like, it's like, it's not even five, he isn't trying, like, hey, let me subdue her first. She starts talking to him, and he just, like, smacks her and knocks her out.
Drops a little baby powder on his hand and just goes to town.
So, which again is probably why he's wearing the glove. So, what it got. So, Iron Man shows up to the warehouse shortly afterwards. The reason why Iron Man had showed up to the warehouse where Madame Mask was right before Hulk took her was that Iron Man wanted to go after Madame Mask, not for Hulk and AIM, but because he's trying to get to the bottom of who killed Whitney Frost, the original Madame Mask. That's his motivation for going after Mask. And he's like, hey, where's Madame Mask at? And they're like, she just got took, bro. But then, so he's like, well, how do I find her? So that's where they reveal that she's got a microchip in her mask that they can tag and follow. So he just follows the Magia trucks going to find her. So as soon as he gets there...
Well, he goes after her. They have her tied into the chair or the table that's going to drain her memory. They basically go... They give the Hulk the money and it's like, beat it. And she had some kind of robots called Dreadnoughts, I believe.
Yeah, Dreadnoughts were... Magia's and Madame Mask sort of protectors. They're awesome looking robots.
Yeah,
they don't get a lot of play in the Marvel Universe outside Iron Man's books, but they have like diamond coated spikes all over their bodies and stuff. They look really, really awesome.
Well, apparently a truck drops off like a dozen of them.
Right, well, that's what was in the trucks. Yeah, that Tony Stark or Iron Man was flying after. The doors open up and all those dreadnoughts come out to go after and get her.
And then of course you get the Joe Fixit art critique of a sculpture in the hallway as he goes, looks like a 6-year-old made it. And then it punches the shit out of her.
Because he's like, hey, it looks like it's moving. And then it knocks him in the face.
So then that's Hulk, how we drag the Hulk in.
Hulk gets to trash a bunch of dreadnoughts as Iron Man shows up. And he jumps in there. He's like, wait, Hulk, hold on. And then
Hulk doesn't give a shit.
Hulk doesn't care. And literally smashes these into pieces. He's like, never mind.
I think he says that every
point. Yeah, he's like, never mind. Iron Man jumps in, frees Madame Mask, who... Of course, before he can question her, like, sort of stuns him for a second.
And then she's whisked
away. Beats it out the door. She's gone. Hulk, standing there with his huge ransom that he got, gets zapped by a dreadnought, destroys his trench coat, which I believe he says cost about a G or something like that. Spent about a grand on it. So he blew up his trench coat and then also vaporized the money he just got. So he gets pissed off, smashes that dude.
At which point, you'll see the Hulk walking, and he commits a robbery as he smashes a window to steal a coat and gently fade into the dark. And right. Tony, I guess that's when Tony confronts the FBI.
Right, so then the FBI, which Iron Man had sort of, and Tony Stark had sort of foreshadowed earlier, that it seemed like the FBI had been working with the Magia, and you weren't really sure why. So this computer screen comes on, and it's one of the heads of the FBI standing there with Madame Mask. And he's like, what the hell's going on? Why do you guys keep helping them? And he reveals, well, hey, we decided if there's three bad crime organizations that we're having to fight, it's a lot easier to just partner with one that can eliminate the other two. And then we've only got the Magia to worry about, which sounds actually fairly reasonable.
Yeah, as long as we, you know, keep a blind eye to some of their crimes.
Right, exactly. In which Iron Man's like, oh, that's cool, man. Hey, that's cool. But guess what? I just recorded this whole conversation.
You just got Linda tricked. So
you just got Linda tricked. That's pretty good. But yeah, he's straight up Linda tripped.
Blue dress and all, baby.
And the next little sequence of panels is just sort of wrapping up that. It's got the president demolishing the FBI's activities and some rogue agents that went through this. Yada yada yada. Anyway. Fast forward, now we get to the Hulk episode. Because, as we should say, as it fades out after the Hulk stole that trench coat, he said he's got to try and find a way to make this trip worth it.
Yeah. Right? In which they then hint at, if you want to know what the Hulk did, go to issue 361 of The Incredible Hulk.
So, that's what we gonna do.
So, in this issue, we come across, of course, the mob is pissed off because there's someone going around Vegas kicking the shit out of everybody. And nobody can figure out who it is. They just know it's some guy named Fixit. Fixit keeps popping up. And of course, as they're talking about this, you know, Joe does a visit. And again, you look at this great Purvis artwork of Fixit holding two mobsters that I'm pretty sure he murdered. I don't know about knocked out, but when you have men, you know, you're holding men like that, they might be dead. And he's coming knocking to, basically fix it was a gun for hire in all the books when he was in Vegas. I mean, you paid him and he went and he hurt whoever you told him to hurt. This one though, we find out is a little bit, again, foreshadowing of what's gonna happen. Joe's there, he scares the shit out of the mob, and all of a sudden...
It's not just the mob, this is the Magia headquarters.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, right.
And, all of a sudden, you know, Iron Man pops up and starts fighting the Hulk. Why? Well, we don't know yet, but we're gonna find out. So they're going back and forth. Basically, Iron Man, what is it, Repulsor Ray?
Yeah, he's Repulsor Ray, knocks the Hulk out of the building, and he's...
Of course, Iron Man then takes off.
Well, no, he doesn't take off yet.
Well, no, he's trying to take off, but the mobsters are trying to kind of make a deal with them. But I guess Tony.
They basically say, okay, so now we got this guy, Fix It, who's going through wrecking all these Magia operations. And at the end of the Iron Man issue, I forgot to mention this too, Tony Stark steps down from Stark Enterprises. Again, we don't need to get into all that. It's not that big a deal. So, but the monster says, hey, I know your boss just stepped down from Stark Enterprises. You're going to need some extra cash. What if we give you $1 million to go hunt down the Hulk? Which, of course, Iron Man had to inform them, yes, that was the Hulk. He's not green and dumb anymore.
Yeah.
He's gray and smart. And they're like, holy crap, he's gray and smart. How are we going to stop him?
Yeah.
One mobster points out, well, Iron Man just stopped him. How about we tell you how the original Madam Mask was killed? That's actually information I was trying to get in the previous issue. So he's like, okay, I want both the cash and I want to hear it from Madam Mask herself, what happened to Whitney Frost, the original Madam Mask. And the guy's like, well, I don't know if we can really get that done. And he's like, all right, fine, then I'm out of here. And he's like, he says, you have until tomorrow to broadcast over some frequency what your decision is. At this point, he flies back to Stark Enterprises, where he comes across...
Joe Fixit waiting outside. Now, of course, he walks up to shake Joe's hand, see if he's okay. Fixit smacks his hand around. He's a little upset, but of course, Iron Man says, you know, what's your problem? You know, why'd you have to... Basically, Fixit is upset that he got repulsor-rayed. And, you know, Iron Man is basically saying, hey, we had to make it look legitimate. You know, they're basically pulling a Ocean's 13 here. You know, they're tricking, they're fooling the mob to get, you know, information, money.
Or Ocean's 11, because it was much better than Ocean's 13.
Yeah, 12 was okay.
I don't even remember this fucking stupid-ass movie. Why did you bring these stupid-ass movies up?
I don't know, dude. I'm just all over the place.
You
see,
you had me with Linda Tripp, and now we...
and I've lost you now.
Lost me with the Oceans movies.
Damn you, ADD. All
right, continue.
So anyway, so Joe Fixit leaves, and of course, it's time to break out the cheese, because here comes some whiny Tony. Truly whiny Tony.
So whiny Tony follows us over this Incredible Hulk issue. There's a little exchange talking about how, man, how can I be a millionaire playboy when I'm stuck in a wheelchair? To which fantastic line from my friend Bruce Banner, he spins his wheelchair around and says, Tony, don't ever, ever presume to trade sob stories with me. Which is terrific, right? Because that's what the Hulk does. The Hulk is Bruce Banner has the worst life ever.
All right, of course.
So he's like, don't tell me about, you know, how women don't like you anymore and how your life is ruined, because I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah. Ooh, your legs don't work. Wah, wah, wah.
So as Tony and Bruce are sort of arguing about, you know, how difficult it is to be Tony right now because his legs don't work, Bruce says, you know, he's at the motivation that, I guess this time in the whole comics, Betty's pregnant. He's got to keep it together because he's got to find Betty, and he's got to, you know, one day he's going to be bouncing that baby boy on his leg, right? Or because he can feel that it's going to be a boy, right?
Yeah.
So I think that was a good touch.
So, of course, here, the thing that's really unusual about the Fix-It character is at night, that's when that Hulk... It's not where Banner gets mad and Hulk hulks out. It's more kind of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, daytime, nighttime. So, of course, this is all happening during daytime. As it's slowly becoming nighttime, the Fix-It persona starts to slowly come alive more. And they're going back and forth. And, of course... Bruce is having this big discussion with Fix-It about trying to get this plan put together. And of course, Tony's sitting in an Iron Man suit watching this, and he's like, holy shit. He's having two conversations and literally morphing back and forth while having these conversations. So, yeah, wham, wham, Tony. My legs don't work. Try being two different fucking dudes in one body. So they're changing back. Iron Man's watching this. And of course, if you get a chance to look at this issue of Hulk 361, I do recommend page 18. Purvis did a fantastic job of just a few panels of the Hulk or Fix-It morphing back and forth. So you have this very grotesque I mean, Hulk is not a pretty creature when fixed as the persona.
So
he's shorter, he's smaller,
and you can imagine the morphing of the human body into the Hulk and vice versa could not be a pretty thing. And Purvis does this great job of and he's sort of in like these sort of in between Banner Hulk shots, and it's just he's just sort of melting and then reforming and sort of melting, and Iron Man's sitting there staring at him like, what the hell just happened? And very cool stuff.
That's kind of a cool visual that Purvis threw in there.
No, the broadcast goes out. Madam Mask says, "All right, let's get this done. You bring us the Hulk, and we're going to give you the information and the money." So, cool. It's on. Let's go meet up.
They show up. Of course, there's two dreadnoughts there, but of course, someone kind of notices, "Hey, why do we have two? Aren't we only supposed to have one?"
Have one, which you can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah,
and he seems like a little bit of a stockier, wider dreadnought.
And of course, Fix-It in his famous bitch slappiness, bitch slaps a dreadnought to death, and rips out of the suit and says, "Go on, say it. It's incredible." Great dialogue, as always. Of course, Iron Man grabs the cash, throws it to Fix-It, which Fix-It is there for purely.
Yeah.
Trying to count the cash, and then here comes our favorite villains, Hydra and AIM, ready to do battle.
They'd been waiting in the wings,
yeah,
for them to crash this party, and then so they basically used Iron Man and Hulk to lead them to the Magia and Madam Mask.
And again, I think they're two really cool science groups that I think really should be something Iron Man takes on. Their technology, their...
He does a lot with AIM, not a lot with Hydra. Really? Hydra, you know, Hydra's more Cap.
Cap, true. That's true. So, of course, one of my favorite pages is page 24, where the Hulk lands with the case of money. This time, smart enough to put the money in someone else's hands. Grabs the billboard, tells him to hold the cash. I'll be back. At which point, of course, Iron Man is gone after Madam. Captures her. All out, there's fighting. Hulk's going Hulk nuts. Everybody's punching and kicking. Another great one where Hulk grabs Iron Man, swings him like a baseball bat.
So now we're at the end of the issue after, obviously, Madam Mask gets away. She escapes. He still doesn't ever learn what happens to Whitney Frost. Mr. Fix-It gets his money back from Bellboy, gives him a little tip.
No, he doesn't. Actually, no, you misread that. He takes the money up, Fix-It touches him on the shoulder and says, "Hey, when I got the money back, felt a little light, about a grand light." Guy hands him the cash. Of course, that's when you know Fix is all about the money.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much that ends it. Of course, we have one more little quick...
little wrap-up scene with Bruce talking to Tony, telling... So he says, "Oh, I'll keep calling in to see if you found Betty. I really appreciate it, Tony. It means a lot." And you see Tony looking at a computer screen. It says, "St. Vincent's Hospital patient record. Elizabeth Banner released May 5th after miscarriage. No forwarding address." So Tony Stark says, "Believe me, Bruce, I know how important your wife and child's welfare are to you. I won't let you down. Goodbye, Bruce." And he's got like this, you know, terrible look on his face, knowing that, man, this dude, I do need to shut up about my legs not working, because Bruce Banner has the worst life ever, period. And that is a brutal way to end this two-part. But I thought it was, was that a great story? No, it wasn't a great story. Did it kind of show a lot about the two characters? I think it did. I don't think either character was really out of their... at least, I should say, Iron Man wasn't out of his sort of normal personality. Tony Stark was being whiny. As long as we just forget Tony in these books, I think that the characters are both portrayed pretty accurately. Fix-It's going after cash, busting people up.
Tony's whining because he can't walk.
Again, we're going to forget Tony's whining. I wouldn't say they're filler issues, because they do have the full-fledged... Although Iron Man was inked by... let me see... Tim DeZahn, who... I don't know. This is where we need Frank in here.
Yeah.
Because he would be like, Tim DeZahn! He was born in Felicia, Wisconsin in 1957. And we don't have that now.
It was a Syrian section. He was actually born with a tail. His twin was attached to him as he came out.
The doctor who delivered Tim DeZahn was... But anyway, so he's not here to give us that kind of detail, but normally Bob Layton is at best when he inks himself, or he's inking someone else. Whoever this Tim DeZahn is, dude, kind of jacked up this issue a bit. But Purvis and Purvis is on point in that issue, and in fact, his Iron Man, that I would not expect to be good, because he's such a grungy artist, is actually really good. He took some liberties with the armor. This was not uncommon, folks, for an Iron Man fan to see Iron Man guest appear in somebody else's book and the armor be completely wrong. This happens all the time. I don't know why an artist can't just open an issue that they could get for free from Marvel to see what the armor is supposed to look like. But again, this happens all the freaking time.
Interpretation art.
No, you don't interpret armor. Especially when it's part of a two-parter and the character...
Does he have a cod piece? I'm not sure.
The character looks different from one issue to the other. But
does he have like 1,000 Iron Man suits?
He does, but come on, man. Come on, man.
I'm just saying, doesn't he have like 1,000 of these suits?
Come on, man.
Oh, hold on. Let's do a scale here. All right, Matt, 1 to 10.
I'd say this is probably a... combined art and writing,
yeah.
I'd say a 6.
I would fully agree with you on that.
So I'd say a 5 for the story and a 7 for the art.
Ooh, much kinder. I would go more 4 for the story.
8 for the art?
8, yeah. Average it out to a 6.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's do 4 for the story. No, because... okay, 4 for the story, 8 for the art.
Because the story was a little wonky at parts. I mean, it's...
We didn't pick these issues because there's some... you know,
great significance in their right. universe. Yeah.
We just picked them because this might be one of the only times I've ever seen Grey Hulk and Iron Man share the spotlight together. This may be it.
And I mean, this was a good pick. Two different books, two different characters intertwined. A nice touch, right?
Unlike some of the Annihilation stuff we're reading, where they give no real background, these issues they do a pretty good job of kind of touching on stuff you need to know, like. They sort of explain to you that the Green Hulk's gone, Grey Hulk's here. You don't really need to know much more than that.
No.
And Iron Man gets to watch him morphing back and forth, which to the people, the Iron Man readers who would buy the Hulk issue would be like, what the hell's going on? But they sort of explain that real quick. That's what's going on. He's morphing between Hulk and Bruce Banner.
And I did get from that one panel, literally, like I said, I didn't know anything about, you know, Iron Man's your guy. And in that one panel, I understood that he got shot, he's wounded, literally paralyzed, and a lot of shit's going downhill for him.
Yeah, and then they do. There is a little snippet where they're talking to a lawyer about what's going to happen to Kathy Darris, and she's the one that shot him, and how it's going to court. So you can kind of understand, oh crap, he's got some stuff going on in this book. So that's why he's in a wheelchair. You know what I mean? Like, it isn't just, he's not just in a wheelchair in the book, which a lot of times happens. So, like I said, it's a pretty good 2 issues. They give you everything you need to know. It's a nice little caper. You know, it's perfectly fine.
There was no resolution. This was like you said, you know, this is a filler. They are filler issues. They literally came together and they're sending you back to your books. The Hulk is going back. Oh, he's going to find out Betty lost the baby. Iron Man, we're going to figure out what's going to happen with him now that he's stepped down and he's paralyzed. So they were pretty much filler books. But for fillers, they're pretty decent filler books. And I know I've read some filler books and you're just like, they're way off topic. Like, you know, you had this nice, I hate those books that they have that nice story arc. And then they throw that one filler issue that it's like the artist was tired or some shit, or the writer, and it's by a new team, and it's always a really shitty book.
Yeah, and so I think that deserves some mention too. They do a really good job of sort of inserting this little crossover in without disrupting what's actually happening in the books. Like you said, sometimes it just, like, you end an issue where stuff happened, and then it's literally like they paused it to run two filler issues, or to run a filler issue, and then all of a sudden it just picks back up. What, yeah. 1 month later, and you're like, oh, what the hell just happened? You know what I mean? So in this one, you're going to be able to blend that continuity through it.
So I think they did a really good job of, hey, look, this little stop happened in the books, but you're still flow. The flow's still there.
Okay, so we said it's a 4, right? But probably for these type of filler issues, they normally start at like a 2.
Oh, yeah.
So we'd say these are good filler
issues. Oh, yeah, I would say good filler issues. Definitely good filler issues. Not great, but definitely good.
But the fact that they're filler issues, they were already operating at a ceiling.
Yeah. And like I said, I've read some filler issues, and you're just like, what? Like, what does this have to do with the book? And that, to me, just ruins the momentum of the
story. Yeah, and I'd say that, I mean, going from issue to issue, even though it's two different writers, I think Dave Michelinie does a really good job with Hulk in this issue, and I think that Peter David does a really good job with Tony Stark and Iron Man here. I mean... they keep it really consistent between the 2 months too, which is also really difficult when you have two creative teams. One picks up the characters, somebody else's characters, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, who the hell is this guy? This isn't who Iron Man is right now. But again, he was whiny in both books, and Hulk was crass in both books. I thought they did a pretty good job. It was interesting. Like I said, I was just skimming through my books and I found these, and I was like, we should talk about this. So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed this very mini half episode. I'll probably put this out on a Thursday.
A Frank-free episode.
Or a Frank-free episode. And we will be back at our regularly scheduled Tuesday morning. I'm going to
cut off. Same Marvel show, same Marvel time. Okay, Mr. Rolled Spine Listener, can you please show me where the Kazar touched you?
Show me on the brain where Kazar touched you.
Inappropriately.
Inappropriately.
That was just a good one.
I don't know how to end this fucking podcast.
I'd say right there.